back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. You want to respond to anything we are discussing this morning. Still to come on the program, State Auditor Jim Ziegler. That's in about 30 minutes. And from the Alabama Policy Institute, Phil Williams. We'll wind it all up with him, so make sure you stick around. But joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest, recently named the chairman of the Education Trust Fund in the House of Representatives, but always a great guest, and we're thankful that he can make time for us. State Representative Danny Garrett on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Hope you are.
Hey, thank you for making time, as always. Well, first, before we get into what we got you on here for, how you settling into that new role there? You know, certainly some big shoes to fill with Bill Poole heading to the Ivy administration, but how is that going in these early stages?
Well, I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hydrant. There's a lot of details, a lot of information. Sometimes it can be overwhelming, but I was a career chief financial officer. I like numbers. I like digging in the numbers. So I'm actually having fun getting a deeper understanding of the situation. The state, because of the federal influx of money, is sitting on a lot of money right now. We've got to make some really smart decisions going forward. I think we have an opportunity to do a lot of things that could be transformative to the state. But I'm enjoying the process, certainly enjoying working with Director Poole now and the LFO folks, the fiscal office folks, and also my colleagues in the budget chairman. So I'm having a good time right now.
Well, that's good to hear. And you know, every year's a new year, so we look forward to seeing what the future holds for you there. But let's get into something. I think this is very interesting to me, the way the Alabama economy is shaking out and the state's response. That you got low unemployment numbers, theoretically, statistically, and we do have a lot of good things happening in this state. A lot of companies are coming to Alabama, and you know, they're putting their stakes in the ground, and that's opening up economic opportunity. You know, not just those companies themselves, but all the economic activity needed to sustain those companies, like the auto manufacturers and parts and suppliers, etc. What we don't have, as far as I could tell, and you highlight this, we have a workforce participation rate that, while it's in line with a lot of the states that surround us, it seems a little on the low side, and how, you know, we need to address that.
Right. Well, the analogy that I'll make, it may be a poor analogy, but Buttigieg recently said that the reason we had all these backups at the ports coming into the country were because of the strong economy. Of course, that's not the case. There's a lot of problems and a lot of reasons for them back up, and not related to the fact that the economy's moving so fast we can't unload things fast enough. The same thing now, I think, with what we see with a lot of our economic spend that's going on right now. I think unemployment is low, but that's only low because very few people who are not working are looking for work. I think the last number I saw was only had about 6,500 people who were actually technically unemployed, meaning they don't have a job, they're not looking for work. There's probably 50, 60,000 people in the state who were employed prior to COVID that are now not working and are now not looking for work. And so they don't come into the unemployment statistic. That they become part of the labor participation rate. Now, I've learned that the highest our labor participation rate has been in Alabama has been 61%. It dropped down to around 55%. Now it's, I think, back up around 56-57%. But that's a lot of people that are just not looking for work. And what's that's troubling because we've got, you look at the low unemployment rate, but everywhere you go, businesses can't hire workers. They're advertising workers. They're shutting down, you know, hours. We have plants in the factories in the state that want to expand, and they can't, even before the pandemic, could not find workers. So there's this workforce issue in the state, but it's been exacerbated right now because we've got people who just are not looking for work. And I'll say this too, that with all of the federal assistance, and there's been $47 billion of federal money coming to the state thus far, and there's a lot more to come. And for that $47 billion, some of that's been in this supplemental unemployment benefit that the state did away with June the 19th. Some of it is now these child care credits that used to, you had to file your return. and get the credit on the back end. He probably returned. Now this money's going in advance form straight to these to people. You had rental assistance. You had a 30% increase in some of the SNAP benefits. We have through the back door managed to set a new minimum wage that's about $15 an hour because the employers that I'm talking to and the data that I've come across suggests that it really takes about $32,000 a year for someone to get back in the workforce and forego all the federal assistance they're getting right now. So it's a problem for us right now. Some of these benefits are expected to expire at the end of the year. I would not be surprised if they're not extended. So labor participation is an issue. The good news is that the governor has got a good team that's working on this, and they're gathering data. And within the next couple of months, I think we'll have some good recommendations. Lieutenant Governor has a workforce task force that's been focused on this. And I think, though, that what I'm less focused on unemployment rate, more focused on the labor participation rate and what we can do to get that back into balance.
I mean, just a 5% swing in the labor workforce participation rate is all the difference in the world. But, I mean, it does seem much worse than that, you know, and maybe it's just because some of the places that we patronize every day are struggling to staff, and then they have to shut, they have to close early or close altogether in some cases in my neck of the woods. But that $15 an hour, is that kind of artificial minimum wage, is that even sustainable?
Well, that's the question, because, of course, what it's leading to already is inflation. And the other thing that's kind of crazy is that right now, the workers that want to work, all the businesses are competing now for a smaller, you know, pool of people. So they're all competing for the same people who are, you know, for less. They're all competing for less labor pool people. But the other thing is that a lot of businesses are having to pay signing bonuses for basically minimum wage employees. And that seems crazy, because when you sign, you get a signing bonus to someone to come work for that deal. Well, what happens to the people that are already there? They get upset, and now you've got businesses that are actually paying retention bonuses for these workers. So is it sustainable? I don't see how it is. But it's hard to retract from that. So when you've got this floor now, which I think through the back door, and I think the people in DC were pretty smart when they put all this together. I think they figured through the back door what we can do to raise this wage rate. But it's leading to inflation. It's going to lead to, the other salaries are all going to be have to adjust in commensurate, you know, in recognition of that. So I don't see how it's sustainable, but it's a mess. We got to work out of, but it won't be, you know, the cliff that's coming will come when the federal assistance is all shut down. But this $47 billion that's coming in, I think we probably have got at least that much more that's going to come in. And some of this money has gone directly to state to agencies in the state. And that's the challenge for me as we start to look at our budgets. You know, what do we need to do? You know, what do we need to do? What's the proper way to budget? What do we need to do? And given the fact that some money has already gone directly to people, that's going to be a factor in my decisions as to how I move forward and how I want to address things. So it's a problem economically, and this is one reason why it's best the government not be involved in these economic decisions, let the free market work. But we are so fouled up right now that it's going to be, I think, when it unravels, it's going to be a hard fall.
Well, yeah, and let's take it to that next level, that if you this federal spigot is inevitably cut off, and most anticipate it will be, man, who knows, maybe it won't, but it most likely will be, inevitably that's going to cause tax revenues to go down, and we're not going to be talking about these, or perhaps potentially not talking about record budgets or record, you know, receipts where you can do all these things, especially what your task with now, you know, finding money for pay raises for teachers and right. You know, all these capital improvement projects that is going to be, you could go in the opposite direction potentially.
Well, I think that's why things like this infrastructure spending bill in D.C. is so important. It's $3.5 trillion. If that were to pass, to unravel, that would just add to the mess we're in right now. And to unravel that would take years. I mean, years to work through all that. So we're setting up some mindsets that I think are not good. Like we're kind of conditioning people that, hey, it's okay. You don't have to work in a job you don't like because here's this assistance that's available to you. We're rationing down expectations, lowering, I think, the value of work ethic. And if we don't get a grip on it, it could change our society for a long time. So, I'm real concerned about it. And I hope in DC they hold the line because we don't want to dig the hole deeper. And that's what the Biden administration seems to be on, a very hard course to do.
Well, I mean, generally speaking, sometimes they get caught in this trap of, you think of labor or you think of people all in this controlled environment, and they don't really calculate the human behavior aspect of it. Well, if I could sit on my couch and make the equivalent of $10 an hour, $15 right. an hour isn't going to do it for me because I lose all that time, and that time is opportunity cost for me to be playing video games or whatever the heck I'm doing in that spare time. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go take a job. And then that just exacerbates the problem. Not necessarily do you need that $15, but maybe you need it has to be even more ultimately.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's changing the way people, there are some people have legitimate reasons for assistance, and we certainly want to help them and help people get back into the labor force. But now we've got a situation where we're making it very easy for people to be comfortable and just not work. And you're right. You just do the math. I mean, you can look right now, look what people are advertising to get people back to hire people for these minimum wage jobs. And that tells you all you need to know.
I mean, just how much can state government do, though? I know that doing more, Governor Ivey's already done some things by, refusing some of these federal benefits. But is there a way to incentivize this or make this an easier transition over time?
Yeah, I was encouraged. I met the other day with Nick Moore, who is on the governor's staff, and he's actually leading this charge for looking at the labor participation rate, because she did set as a goal to increase this even before the pandemic, but it's kind of been given a lot more opportunity during the pandemic for them to see things to do. But like, I think you may see some community college programs get more involved in credentialing, doing some credentials for some certifications for jobs that are very lucrative and are needed. For example, I think there's one situation going on now. One of the first credentials that will be available will be for butchering, butcher school through your colleges. And I think it's out of the box, kind of non-traditional. They're going to identify, I think, areas that are needed, services that are needed, and provide a way for maybe people to get credentialed in those professions or those jobs. And then that will kind of help. So I think there's some proactive things you can do to help get people to the jobs we need. Certainly as automotive plants look to continue to expand, again, going into the pandemic, they didn't have enough workers. So we can do some things proactively to kind of prepare people. But the thing is, we got to get people who really want to work. And, it's a tough situation right now. But yeah, I think there's some things we can do, that would be, positive and positive, enforcement or positive enticement, I guess, as opposed to just some negative and punitive stuff. The unemployment rate is low, which means few people are on unemployment, and unemployment trust fund as a result is strengthening, which is ultimately going to be a good thing. But I'm telling you, we've got to get out of this federal dependency and this federal assistance to get through this, and it's a mess for our country right now.
Well, such a big part of this is these supply chain disruptions are a product of just the struggles of the labor market, right? If you can't get people to come work at the factory, if you can't get them to work at the, at the farm or at the chicken plant or name whatever the job is, then you have these disruptions that the market is like artificially buoyed by this federal money. So I guess the question would be looking down the line that this could get really bad for those of us in the consumer economy.
Right. It can. I mean, you're already saying it. Inflation is going to be we're already seeing it, and that's going to get worse. Probably the supply chain, too. Even if you get even if you get the cargo to the ports, and then you got to find people to unload the cargo. Even if you get through all of that, you got to find trucks to drive the cargo, and that's a big problem right now, getting the truck drivers. And of course, look at gasoline prices. So you play this thing all the way out. It's just a mess, and it's a mess that's really happened literally in what, 10 months? I mean, it's crazy because you've changed some fundamental policies and approach to economics. And so we've got to get back on track soon. I mean, because the longer we go down this road, the longer it's going to take for us to get back to normalcy. And it's going to be painful, I think, at some point, you know, to ratchet back. But it's necessary if we want to go back to have the type of economy we had before.
Representative, we're up against break. We got to leave it there. But we do appreciate your time this morning. You're always very kind to come on, and stay safe in Montgomery this week.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. House State Representative Danny Garrett, chairman of the Education Trust Fund in the House of Representatives. But interesting dynamics in the economy. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Many times, somebody take me home.